Welcome to the Humanize podcast, all about personalizing your health. I am your host, Rebecca Kelly, and today we'll be discussing your genes and weight management with Chrissy Williamson. But before I introduce Chrissy Williamson, I want to remind everyone to subscribe and get all the other variety of casts in audio, video, and transcription at humanizehealth.com. I'd also like to thank our lead sponsor, Village Green Apothecary, at myvillagegreen.com. So Dr. Chrissy Williamson is a master of the biochemical and nutritional sciences. As the owner and founder of the Nutritional Genomics Institute, she has dedicated her life's work to revolutionizing personalized medical nutrition. Chrissy's systems medicine approach encompasses both cutting-edge genomic technology and functional testing, offering the highest level of metabolic evaluation and lights a path for lifelong healing and wellness. Dr. Chrissy, thanks for being with us.
For having me. Excited to be here.
I am so excited to talk about the subject. And I know that this is very much within the context of what we are about at Humanize Health, personalizing your health care. And you actually do that to down to the SNP, right? So we're really getting into something that's really, really personalized. So can you explain how genes can impact metabolism and weight?
So that's a question we get all the time is how do your genes and your blueprint impact your metabolism and weight? And is it genetic? And gosh, everybody in my family's overweight and, this must impact me, so I'm just going to sit on the couch and eat bonbons and chips and not worry about it because it's in my genes and, I'm just, why bother? So part of that is true and part of it isn't true. So we inherit a lot of things from our parents, some good, some bad. One of the things that babies inherit from their parents is actually their microbiome, especially if it's a vaginal birth. So we do get our microbiome obviously that way. And then we also get it from living in the same environment as our brothers and sisters and our parents. So that's one thing that actually strongly influences our metabolism and, our weight regulation. So the Bacteroidetes to Firmicutes ratio is something that's been studied quite a bit in terms of whether or not we are going to have a weight loss pattern or not. So testing is important for that as well. But we also pick up a lot of our parents' bad habits. So, if mom and dad happen to, go and stress eat, then we may go and stress eat too. Now, are there genes that are associated with stress eating? Of course there are. Are there genes that are associated maybe with dopamine deficiency that might cause us to maybe want to eat a little bit more from time to time? Of course there are. But then there's also cultural things as well. So, to answer your question, can genes impact metabolism and weight? Sure. But I think your epigenes or epigenomics have a much larger impact on your metabolism and weight. So your environment, how you're actually going to make those genes express themselves, have a bigger impact on your true, weight, final weight anyway. So it's the environment loading the gun or the genes loading the gun and the environment pulling the trigger kind of thing.
Right. Wow. Fascinating. So what are some key SNPs that can influence, an individual's response to their diet, like fats, protein, carbs? Are there, some that influence body weight, appetite, blood sugar, diabetes risk, circadian rhythm, all of these kinds of things? Can you share more about that?
Sure. Yeah. There are some that have been really well studied that really do impact, whether or not you should or should not eat certain macronutrients that really truly do impact, your risk for certain diseases. One, there's a study that just recently came out just a couple of days ago that reinforced what we call the classic Yang study of 2007 about saturated fat. Because of course we hear, all the time, oh, saturated fat is good for us and saturated fat is bad. We're not really sure whether we should eat eggs or not, all these different things. And
it's
the study
really
came
confusing.
Out.
There's so many messages and it's hard to know how to take care of yourself. And you hear this and you hear that, but you're saying it might depend, right?
It does depend. None of the studies, or most of the studies, do not control for genotype. So this study actually came out, it was a cardiology study, and thank God, finally, they said, it depends on your genotype. Oh my gosh. So it's the APOE4. So, you know, if you've paid attention to Alzheimer's disease or cardiovascular disease, or playing in this sandbox at all, you've heard of this SNP. But heart disease and Alzheimer's are basically controlled by the same gene. And so it's the saturated fat gene, or it's a fat carrier gene. And the way I describe this is that when you, and I said, I was trying not to say, so, when you have this fat carrier gene, I did it again. When you have this fat carrier gene, and we're going to laugh about this. For those of you who are watching this, I was really trying not to say, this time. But it's a habit of mine, and I'm really trying not to. So you guys,
I think
can
it's adorable. Keep it up.
As I'm going to blush and turn red this time. So the fat carrier gene, if you have a broken fat carrier gene, or you carry the number 4 allele for this, and when it has fat on it and it gets blocked or lodged in your brain or in your arteries, when this happens, then that's when it causes inflammation. And that's how we get essentially Alzheimer's or cardiovascular disease. So the way that we prevent that, unfortunately, we don't know how to modulate this particular gene. We just don't eat saturated fat. Pretty simple. Okay. So this decreases our risk for those two diseases and things like type 2 diabetes, et cetera, ad nauseum. If you're luckier and you carry the neutral allele, the number 3 allele, then saturated fat's not such a big deal for you. Now, interestingly, the APOE2 allele actually carries some risk. So you don't quite get off the hook if you're one of those rare people. And I actually have this gene too. If you have two of those, then you're in big trouble. Then you have something called beta dyslipidemia. So that can be problematic too. But I guess the point here is that, you know, when we're looking at whether or not fat is good for you or bad for you and how it can actually express in terms of your disease risk, you really do have to look at genes. Now, how does that actually translate into weight? Well, we end up looking at a whole bunch of different genes. So one gene does not equal disease in most cases. We end up having to look at hundreds of different genes. So the super nerds over at NGI, we tend to look at these giant algorithms, and then we look at biomarkers that correlate with these algorithms. So when we're looking at things like whether or not you're at risk for yo-yo dieting, for instance, we look at a certain gene called adipoQ that regulates adiponectin. So if you happen to have variations in a gene like adiponectin, then if you happen to even get overweight at one point, so let's just say you've lost 30 pounds, or you're those people that happen to have been on The Biggest Loser and you've lost 100 pounds and you have issues in this adiponectin gene, your fat cells are literally like Kate from the Titanic, come back, come back. And they're like crying and screaming and throwing a hormonal hissy fit. Now, that gene plays with the leptin receptor gene, who also plays with the ghrelin gene. And it literally will sit there and say, oh, we're going to make you be really hungry. And then we're going to make you be cranky if you don't get the fat and sugar that we're like throwing up in your stomach right now. And so it will give you this hormonal cascade, make you feel miserable if you don't get that and don't want to be around anybody who is feeling like that, I promise you. So there are all kinds of things that can actually influence your weight. The good news is that we do know how to modulate a lot of those genes. So things like
Yes,
thank God for that. So, I mean, there are all kinds of little tweaks that we can do to play with the leptin genes or play with the ghrelin genes, play with adiponectin genes. There are all kinds of what I would call aces in the hole, like ashwagandha and astragalus. There's all kinds of cool little things that we can do depending on your particular cascade of genes. So all of those things impact your weight. All of those impact your weight maintenance, which is also super important. So it's not just your ability to lose weight, it's your ability to maintain that weight loss. That's really important for longevity and health.
Wow. Wow. So how can then genomic testing help determine the best diet for somebody or what eating approach that they need for their body, whether they're losing weight, whether they're maintaining? I mean, you've kind of given an example of the cascade that can happen. How is that then best determined?
So to be honest, I think it all starts with inflammation. And for me, there are 5 pillars of inflammation when it comes to diet. One of those is fats, which we touched on. The other ones are oxalates, salicylates, sulfur, and histamine. And so, you know, those last four, most people have never heard of before. We can't really measure a lot of those in traditional testing. Histamines, you might be able to measure if you have true mast cell activation disorder. So plasma histamine, elevated IgE, tryptase levels, those types of things. But histamine intolerance, most people don't really know. You know, a lot of times you're going to have some anxiety. You might have a little interstitial cystitis, or for women, you might feel like your bladder is kind of quivering all the time. You might have diarrhea after you eat more often than not. And most people don't necessarily think about it that way. You know, most people think, oh, histamine, rash, and they're going to be covered in hives. That's not really what histamine intolerance is. So we have other things like oxalates, for instance. So unless you have a history of kidney stones, most people have never heard of oxalates. But oxaluria ends up causing fibromyalgia-like symptoms in most people, and osteoporosis. So there are all these things that we can see on some of our fancy functional testing. And those are things that are nice to see. But really and truly, when we look at genetics, we're able to have some predictability on those things. So we're able to go, aha, we see this pattern in our genes. And we're able to identify some of these inflammatory pillars without having to necessarily use some of those fancy tests that may not be available for most people. Direct-to-consumer genetic testing is cheap, effective, and really easy and accessible to just about everybody. So, you know, it's one of those things where if we can identify what some of these inflammatory pillars are, we can decrease our disease risk astronomically.
Wow. I have one more question, and this is a question that we didn't discuss. So I'm just throwing it in here as a surprise for you.
What you got?
but I would love to kind of know, what's kind of your vision for the future of personalized nutrition? Because that gets to kind of the essence of what we're talking about at Humanized Health. And I think it also gets to what you're really focused in doing, right, in with your business. So what do you think the future might look like?
So there's kind of a blend between like what they were trying to do at Theranos, you know, and that is one of those things where we do need to scale. We need to, you know, have a blend of AI, you know, that kind of goes forward, but we also need to, as a society, make sure the snake doesn't eat the tail. So, you know, we have to make sure that the AIs don't kind of outrule and the robots don't end up ruling the humans here. So I think that's something we have to be really cautious about. But we do need supercomputers that are able to compute all of the different algorithms that go along with looking at, okay, this one gene here, this one alteration in this gene, you know, spins off 15, 20 different biomarkers and how all of those things interact. And, you know, we need to be able to have a patient walk into their primary care's office that takes insurance. They need to be able to do that without having to come to a specialist. And for that doctor to be able to say, oh, you fill up these three buckets of inflammation. You should be able to, you know, have this particular diet. And by the way, you are allergic to these types of medications, or you have impairments in these types of medications. And this is your optimal exercise. These are the basic things that you should be doing for optimal health. And that should be, you know, a basic first initial appointment with any physician that you go to see. This should not be a specialty appointment. You shouldn't have to come, you know, to a specialty practice to get that kind of information. So ideally, that would be what I would like to see as the future of medicine.
I really love that. I love the sense of empowerment that that would give somebody, where you're not just guessing because you look around at your family and you think, oh, I may or may not have to be dealing with this, but you actually know what that looks like and what the steps might be then to take charge of your life in so many ways. I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you, Dr. Chrissy. Those are really valuable insights. Chrissy Williamson can be found at www.nutritionalgenomicsinstitute.com. I'm just going to spell that. N-U-T-R-I-T-I-O-N ALGENOMICSINSTITUTE.com. So nutritionalgenomicsinstitute.com, just to make sure they can find you. let me remind you to subscribe and get access to all Humanized videos, podcasts, and transcriptions from all of our thought leaders on personalized health at humanizedhealth.com. Thanks so much for being with us. It's such a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.